Let me speak to a man from a different newspaper. It is Sam McBride, who is the political editor with the newsletter. Sam, good morning. Good morning, Sam.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, Sam. You're very welcome to the programme. Spotlight very much on Arlene yesterday and on some of her, some of the names that we've associated with her from behind the scenes for years today. How do you reckon she's coming through it?
I think that she probably will be fairly happy with how she performed yesterday and those people in the DUP who want her to continue as leader, and that's certainly not everybody these days, but the people who are still loyal to her, I think, will be pretty happy with how things went yesterday. It was a very uncomfortable day. She faced really difficult questions over a prolonged period. She was there for about 7 hours. The inquiry actually sat later last night to finish her evidence. So it was a very testing examination of her conduct and the conduct of her special advisor and the conduct of her party, both during her time as leader and during the time of her predecessor, Peter Robinson. But fundamentally, I think she adopted a pretty strikingly different approach from that which she had adopted when she first appeared before the inquiry. She admitted to a series of DUP failures. She admitted to a regret on at least one occasion as to how she had acted. And that, to a certain extent, I think, helped to see off some of the very difficult questions, because she wasn't arguing with the panel. She wasn't saying, really, your interpretation of this evidence is wrong. She was just accepting what they were saying, even if it was quite damaging to the party. But I think that might come at the cost of perhaps some quite stinging criticism from the panel when they come to report on this, because rather than her putting up a stout defence on many of these issues, she was really just accepting that how the party had behaved was beyond defending, and that was certainly a very different approach to how she presented herself to the public at the height of this scandal, where really, in essence, she was saying, this wasn't my fault, this wasn't the fault of the DUP, this was either the fault of Jonathan Bell or the civil service. And really, there's very little to see here. It's all a media storm. I don't know why people are getting so worked up about this. That was really the essence of what she was saying. So it was a very different approach from Arlene Foster yesterday at the inquiry.
Was it clever? I know you've touched on it in what you've said there, but it seemed clever to me and to anyone who's involved in a discussion or a debate. And we all make this mistake. We get involved in the argument and we will raise our heckles and we'll make our point and point our finger sometimes. And that's very often when we're beginning to lose the battle or lose the argument. There were times when she gave short, direct replies, and you saw the lawyer in her almost. You saw the very cool customer in Arlene Foster.
That's right, and it was striking yesterday as well that there was much more precision in how she answered questions. So her evidence, both written over many pages and oral to the inquiry over several days up until yesterday, had been really littered with the phrase, I can't recall, I can't recollect, I'm not sure, I can't remember. And that was something which had led to a degree of public comment as to the nature of her memory, as to how much she was aware of what was happening, as to how clear she was about these critical events. Yesterday, she really used those phrases pretty rarely, and she was much clearer about a lot of these issues. But as I say, at various points, that came at the expense of conceding aspects of the narrative which has built up against the party. And on one very significant area, she admitted that essentially the DUP had broken the law. They had broken not only the law, but they had broken a law which the DUP voted for to become the law in the Stormont Assembly. So this was the Civil Service Special Advisors Act Northern Ireland 2013. It was a piece of legislation that was brought by Jim Allister, and the headline from it was that it was going to stop people with serious criminal convictions, and really it was aimed at Sinn Féin advisors from being special advisors, from claiming public funds, and there was a great deal of debate around that. But one of the provisions in that act was that when you appointed a special advisor, you had to follow a statutory code, and that set out very carefully, because these people were getting public money, because they were getting access to the highest level of government, that there were a series of hoops that you had to jump through. It had to be the minister's appointment. It couldn't be some outside body deciding that the minister would have a certain special advisor. And actually, on the evidence of several witnesses to the inquiry, that was not what was happening. And Jonathan Bell, the former DUP minister, has said that he was signing a letter on at least two occasions to appoint a special advisor. And the letter that he signed was false because it really told the civil service, I have conducted a process, I have looked at a range of candidates, I have chosen this individual, and I think they should get this very high salary. Actually, his evidence was that that was nothing to do with him, really. He was told what to do by the party, and either the party leader or a senior special advisor was the person who was behind the scenes, pulling the strings, if you like, and they were doing that. Now, Arlene Foster essentially conceded under questioning yesterday that her party had broken that law, but she defended it to a certain extent by saying, well, everybody else was doing it too. Now, whether they were or not will be a matter for the inquiry. Perhaps we haven't heard evidence about that. But even if that was the case, it was put to her by Dame Una O'Brien, who is one of the panel members in the inquiry, that that really isn't much of a defence. Two wrongs do not make a right. And at that point, Arlene Foster, again, in the style to which she was customary yesterday and how she approached the questions, she just conceded, yes, that's right. So I think that throughout yesterday, she was, yes, accepting a lot of what was being put to her, but a lot of what she was accepting does not reflect well on her or on the DUP.
We also got an insight into how OFM, DFM really works and how slow it all is.
We did, and I mean, it's certainly no secret that OFM, DFM was just a place of logjam and confusion and chaos at various points. Often there were complaints about various issues which just got stuck in there for months or years. But really, we got much more of a candid and an on-the-record insight into what happened there. And just as an example, as the RHI scheme was coming to close finally, it had cost controls at this point, but it was still massively over budget. The budget was increasing as more people came in, and really there was an urgent need to close it to try to limit the exposure to the public purse. And at that point, it was really taken over by the First Minister's office. So the First Minister and the Deputy First Minister invoked urgent procedures, which allowed them to step in. And even though it was a matter for Jonathan Bell, they really took control of the situation. But on the evidence to the inquiry yesterday from Mrs. Foster, really what happened was there was a lot of kickback from people who were wanting to install these boilers. They had quite an understandable criticism of government. The government had said to them, we want to incentivise you to do this. Then at the last minute, the government was really pulling the rug from under them, and they were going to have a very significant financial outlay as a result of that. So for quite understandable reasons, government looked at that and thought, well, actually, that's not quite right. Maybe we need to give these people some more time. But rather than get any sort of expert advice on that or analysis as to what that might cost taxpayers, what Mrs. Foster said was that essentially the DUP and Sinn Féin special advisors working under her and working under Martin McGuinness got into a room and really plucked out of thin air that there would be a two-week extension. They didn't know how much it would cost. They didn't know how many people were likely to pile in. And that, we now have been told at the inquiry yesterday, will cost the taxpayers up to £91.5 million. Now, Mrs. Foster said that's something that really she and Sinn Féin just have to take on the chin because it was their decision. But that's not the impression that she conveyed when this was a huge public scandal at the time. Really, her message, in essence, was that this was not her fault. It was the fault of civil servants. What she was saying yesterday was that civil servants were, in many ways, cut out of big aspects of the process at that point. And really, you had political people, unelected people in special advisors, taking it upon themselves to make these sorts of decisions in the absence of any significant analysis of what it would actually cost.
It is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. For people who have time to watch it, it is, you know, I know some people glaze over, and they may glaze over today or tomorrow or whenever, but there are times when you can't take your eyes off it, and it makes a great read, and you can read all about it in the newsletter, among other papers. Sam, thank you very much. Sam, thank you.